Hello, everyone. My name is Anthony Bandiero, attorney and senior legal instructor for Blue to Gold Law Enforcement Training, bringing you another webinar. Welcome to Traffic Stops and Canines. This is a, if you're watching this is a live webinar. As you can see, I'm broadcasting, you know, from my hotel room at the Motel 6, right? And we have hundreds and hundreds of cops that are watching this live. And why that is important is that if you see me kind of looking to the side over here, it's because I'm looking to see what they have to write. If they have any questions for me, I'll try to answer those questions. Also, you know, right after this webinar, we're going to do the search and seizure show. So if you want to watch that, go to YouTube and go to Blue to Gold, our YouTube channel at Blue to Gold, to watch our live 1 hour approximately search and seizure show, which will have two co-hosts. We're going to have Zach Miller and John Ween, two phenomenal search and seizure instructors, are going to join me, and we're going to answer a lot of questions. Okay, quick disclaimers, right? You wouldn't be a lawyer if you didn't have some disclaimers. I feel that makes me important, so let me share. Laws and agency SOPs may be more restrictive, right? Standard operating procedures. I'm going to talk about generally what the law is in 2024, but I'm going to focus on the Fourth Amendment. Now, the good thing is that 90% of what I teach today is applicable to all states, right? Most states don't go off the reservation and, you know, make things more restrictive than the U.S. Supreme Court. However, some states do, like Washington, New Mexico, Oregon, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey, right, et cetera. If you have any doubts about what you can do, up, you know, do push up the chain, you get your questions answered. And finally, this course is legal education, not legal advice. All right. So we have some, this is our agenda today, free air sniffs, reasonable suspicion detentions, pre-alert touching of vehicles, which, as you, if you know my training, I'm very big on talking about these issues and miscellaneous issues. Okay. You know what? If you're going to talk about traffic stops and canines, you might as well start with Illinois versus Cabalas. What happened here in a nutshell is that a trooper in Illinois stopped old Roy Cabalas for some traffic violation. And while they were, while one trooper was issuing that citation, another trooper was running his canine around the vehicle, right? Now, it's important to know that the traffic stop was continuing, right? Because they didn't, allegedly, they did not have reasonable suspicion for old Roy, right? They just wanted to do a classic free air sniff, right? Hey, I got time on my hands. Let me exercise the pooch and just run it around Roy's car. Dog alerted. They searched it. They found drugs. We are going to the U.S. Supreme Court. And Roy's argument is that somehow this canine sniff, right, is a search under the Fourth Amendment. And if it's a search, well, we can't do it as a matter of routine. We're going to have, you know, likely probable cause, right? Searches usually require probable cause. And the U.S. Supreme Court says, not so fast, Roy, right? They said, look, a dog sniff conducted during a lawful traffic stop that reveals no information other than a substance that no individual has any right to possess does not violate the Fourth Amendment. So this is really a privacy argument, right? It's really saying, Roy, you just don't have any privacy. You don't have any privacy in the air around your vehicle. You don't have any privacy in contraband. Now, if this dog, you know, was able to detect a legal substance, man, that's, that to me is a game changer. And what I mean by that is, you know, you, if your state allows recreational marijuana use on, you know, on a, you know, October 1st, for example, right? Well, if your dog is proofed in that marijuana, I got to tell you, you know, and Zach, can Zach, what is your opinion on this? I got to tell you, I think the next day on October 2nd, I think your dog is in a homeless shelter, right? Because I don't know how you can say with a straight face that the dog is only alerting on contraband when it could be alerting on, you know, marijuana, which is now legal possessed. Now, there's always kind, okay, and Sean agrees too, right? There's always kinds of, you know, hey, what about a car full of teenagers? Fine. What about schools? Fine. What if they say they have no marijuana in the car? I can see that argument. But at the end of the day, you know, if it's if you don't have anything like that, I don't think the dog is reliable, right? So that's why I just bring that up. Now, also remember as well that Cabalas was all about a dog being run around a car, you know, at a you know, a traffic stop. You know, clearly the Cabalas can't complain under the Fourth Amendment about where that dog physically is in most traffic stops, because that person is not going to have a privacy interest in where that car is. However, if the person has a privacy interest in where that car is located, then that actually can change the facts a little bit, right? And we know that from, you know, Hardinas, right? So what happened here is Hardinas is suspected of growing marijuana for sale in Miami, Florida. And yeah, I'll talk about it in a second. So good question, Jonathan. So the Miami police want to do a knock and talk at his residence. That is a picture of his residence right there. So they go to the knock and talk and they bring Frankie, the drug sniffing dog, right? Good boy, Frankie. And that is actually a picture in the bottom right corner of Frankie. And if you can look closely, you can see a lot of cocaine on his nose, which means he's definitely a Miami police dog. And when they bring the dog onto his curtilage, right? You know, what is curtilage? Curtilage is that area around a home, very close to the home, very close, like, you know, feet matter here, right? But, you know, around the home where the expectation of privacy is almost the same as the house, right? So they bring the dog on the curtilage to the front door during the knock and talk. The dog predictably alerts and they use that in a search warrant. Well, what is the argument, you know, by Hardinas? His argument is like, hey, you don't have, you know, you don't have my permission, essentially, to bring that drug sniffing dog onto my curtilage, either implied or express. And they're correct, right? And he's correct. So the Supreme Court said, you know, to find a visitor knocking on the door is routine. Okay, fine. People knock on doors all the time, even if sometimes unwelcome. To spot that same visitor exploring the front path with a metal detector or marching his bloodhound into the garden before saying hello and asking permission would inspire Moses, well, call the police, right? In other words, it's intrusive, right? We don't allow that. We don't permit people to be that intrusive on our curtilage, right? And Sean says Jardines, or is it Hardinas, right? I actually have been saying Jardines for many, many years because I don't speak Spanish. I don't know sometimes how to pronounce it. But I got to tell you, I've been corrected and I'm going to now do the right thing and say it correctly, Sean. It's Hardinas. Okay. So Jonathan says, what if your dog isn't trending marijuana? Then we're good to go, right? If your dog is not detecting marijuana in a state that is presumptively legal to have recreational use, then we are good to go. For example, there is usually no Fourth Amendment search if canines are deployed around cars in motel parking lots and hallways. Look, unless your state requires reasonable suspicion to deploy a canine, right? Like Minnesota, right? Which is where I'm at right now. I taught canine case law all day today in St. Paul, right? Unless your state requires some reasonable suspicion to start doing the sniff, you can do this. I mean, you can do it in Tennessee and Texas, and you know, you can use that alert as probable cause and so forth. Now, on the other hand, there is a split of authority on sniffing apartment doors, right? Look, it's rare that apartments have curtilage, right? But there are courts out there that are saying that you can't sniff an apartment door even in a common hallway. What's my feeling on it? I don't know. I think it's a stretch to say that somehow they have an expectation of privacy there. I think ultimately if the U.S. Supreme Court would you know, decide this case and look at it, I think that they would have to probably find that there was no search that took place here. I think that some judges, I think that some judges are really like, I think they feel sorry right? I think they actually feel sorry for apartment dwellers, and somehow they just give them more protection, similar to a house. But push comes to shove, it is rare that an apartment hallway is somehow curtilage. Cameron says gated complexes. Look, my general rule is that if you get in there lawfully, then you're fine, right? If you can somehow, if you're not somehow criminally trespassing in that area, then the dog is lawfully present. So, you know, whether it's, you know, getting permission or the gate is open and so forth. Would this change if it was a dorm room and the dog was in the hallway? Look, I got to teach you, unless you're in a, dorm rooms are apartments. Okay. I just want to make that clear. Okay. Constitutionally, they're treated like apartments with some co-occupants. So if you're in a state like Texas, Connecticut, Nebraska, you should not do it, in my view. But if you're in a state like North Dakota and many in California and many others, then you can do it. Kyle says private colleges. Yes, as long as if it's the police doing it, right? Whether it's private or public, then we can't do it. But you know, in some states. All right. So yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. So there are some states in there that analyze the gated community under lawful access, though. You know, where there was some cops that like kind of trespass into a locked apartment complex, and I don't know, they seem to imply that that was a factor, right? That, you know, somehow trespassing somehow violated expectation of privacy, but I think it's debatable at the best. All right, yeah, maybe Illinois. All right, extend the stop. So remember, if you run a canine without reasonable suspicion, the original reason for the stop must continue. I like to say that this is non-negotiable, right? It's non-negotiable. I mean, if the Supreme Court has been clear about anything on this issue, it's that you cannot extend a traffic stop to run a canine unless you have some amount of reasonable suspicion. I mean, 1 minute is too long. I saw a case at the trial level. It didn't go very high, but I saw a case out of Idaho where the cops called for the canine without reasonable suspicion and added seconds to the stop. And this trial judge in Coeur d'Alene, suppressed the evidence. Now, I don't think that's the answer. I'm not teaching you that. First of all, it's a trial court, so it's not even binding anyway. But that's how extreme some of these issues can be, right? So what happened in Rodriguez? First of all, this involved Nebraska, okay? So is John here? I know Zach is here, obviously. Let me see if my boy John is here so I can make my joke. No, John is not here yet. I was about to say that at least, you know, there's another state besides Arizona that makes bad case law. So what happened here is that an officer in Valley, Nebraska, he stops this guy named Dennis Rodriguez, and he releases him, right? Like with a warning or something like that. And he asks Denny's, like in Moons or Miami, hey, can I run my dog, you know, around your car? And Denny's said no. And instead of letting him go or articulating reasonable suspicion, he detained them and ran the dog, which took about 7 minutes to deploy, right? Backup officer had to arrive. They deployed it for another, you know, get the dog out of their car and so forth. And instead of trying to go down the reasonable suspicion route, the prosecution argued that this was not even an issue, right? Because the detention was de minimis. De minimis is Latin for minimal. It means like, hey, Denny's, come on. Like, why are you bringing this up? Like, why are you complaining about, a 7 minute detention with no reasonable suspicion? Don't you have better things to do? And I got to tell you, like, what a shitty argument. You know what I mean? Like, who's buying that? Like, if the police can detain people for 7 minutes, up to 7 minutes, with no reasonable suspicion, I mean, that's an ab workout for a lot of people, right? I mean, 7 minute abs. Like I'm walking on the street and old Amanda Williams, my officer in Kansas, is like, hey, sir, you're detained. I'm like, for what? And Amanda says, I don't need a reason. I got 7 minutes, according to Rodriguez, right? So it's a bullshit argument. It's really not persuasive. And it goes to the U.S. Supreme Court. And of course, they're going to hammer the officer and so forth. And they basically said, look, you can't detain somebody, you cannot extend the traffic stop. That's really what the message is. You cannot extend the traffic stop for these unrelated reasons, right? And that's like the message here. Now, so Ryan says it's not about what they think is reasonable. It's about what they can get away with, right? So many things being thrown out there that some judges go for it. Well, look, it is very true, Ryan, that you know that trial judges are sometimes a cop's best friend, right? And why is that? Psychologically, if you're a judge, maybe you want to err on the side of the cops. You break bread with the prosecutor. I'm not saying there's undue influence. There is in some situations, and you don't want the guilty to go free. So, but at the appellate level, whether it's the Court of Appeals, the State Supreme Court, or the U.S. Supreme Court, at that appellate level, there's more time for reflection. There's more time to think about, what are we allowing here? Like, are we really going to allow a cop to detain somebody for 7 minutes and not have to justify it? So here are some lawful ways to call for a canine. Number one is the request takes about, give or take 10 seconds. I'm just throwing this out here. Okay, this is just Anthony talking here. But I got to tell you, it's the worst option. Anytime you add time, right, to the traffic stop for an unrelated reason, especially to call a canine, it could always come back to bite you. It's just the way it is, okay? The other option is the request is made during unavoidable downtime. That's not a bad option, right? So for example, you want to get a dog out there for a free air sniff, no reasonable suspicion, classic Roy Cabalas style, and you're waiting for dispatch to come back with your warrants check or something like that. And you get on the radio car to car, and you say, hey, canine handler, can you come down and, pay me a visit? And the handler's like, yep, I'll be on my way. And then when he or she arrives, they deploy their dog in a manner that's consistent with the Fourth Amendment. That's okay. I mean, I've seen that done. Driver consents to a canine sniff. That's no problem there. In most states, you can ask for, you can ask for consent even without reasonable suspicion, but some states require reasonable suspicion to kind of extend that traffic stop. But most states would not have a problem with this. You multitask and it doesn't add time. So this is where, you're typing on your computer, your MDT, you're typing up that citation, you're doing your field requirements like, demographic information and so forth. And while you're on there, you're saying, hey, canine handler, can you come out to my scene? I got about 5 minutes left and, hopefully they can make it in time. And finally, and absolutely the best option in my view, is if you're going to call this canine, hopefully they'll be on scene to begin with. But if you have to call this canine, the backup officer does it. Do you guys see why that's the best? Because it doesn't implicate the primary officer, right? There is no argument that can probably be made that somehow this primary officer is extending the traffic stop for an unrelated reason. That backup officer can do whatever he wants. He can talk to the occupants. He can observe, he can be on the phone and so forth. That's why it's the best option. Now, when does a traffic stop end? So generally speaking, a traffic stop ends under two conditions. Number one is the officer releases the driver. Okay. So the reason I bring this up is because some officers before Rodriguez were under the impression that if they did a traffic stop very quickly, they would earn bonus time, right? So for example, if I asked you in court, how long does it take on average to do a speeding ticket, And you say, average stop, 15 minutes. Some officers actually thought that if they did that traffic stop in 10 minutes, right, they were the rabbit, then they get an extra 5 minutes while this guy's detained to do other unrelated stuff. No, if you're intentionally quick, you do not benefit from your hard labor. The other issue, though, is after a reasonable time has elapsed. So if your average traffic stop takes 15 minutes, but you're waiting for that canine to do the free air sniff without reasonable suspicion, right? And you're intentionally dragging your feet. And in other words, you're intentionally being the turtle, right? Or the tortoise. Let's be accurate, I guess. if you're intentionally being the tortoise, then that can come to bite you. Now, how does that look? How about the officer in Texas who came up to me during one of my breaks in the class and he says, Anthony, check it out. Okay, you tell me if I'm good or bad. He said, you know, when I try to do these free air sniffs, you know, I'm trying to get an officer out there, and I know the officer is on his way, but he's, you know, he's trying to get there. He's trying to rush. I actually write MDT tickets. I'm sorry, I write paper tickets, right? Normally I write MDT tickets, right? Computer tickets, swiping them, scanning licenses. But when I want that canine handler to get there and do that old free air sniff, I write paper tickets because I got to tell you, Anthony, I'm a slow writer. Am I good? What do you think I told that officer that day, right? No, you're not good, right? If the court knew, right? If the court knew, they can see what you're doing there. And the stop right before this stop and the stop right after this stop were MDT tickets, but this one was a paper ticket and it took a lot longer. No, come on. So here's my point. You don't get rewarded, okay? You don't get rewarded by intentionally being the fastest cop on the block. But then you also don't get rewarded by intentionally being the slowest, okay? How about this? How about you just be reasonable, right? Just be reasonable. Just do your job. And the, you know, you are a government employee, so clearly you're not the fastest employee on the block, okay? But don't go full union and take a 15-minute, you know, coffee break during the traffic stop either. All right, the next stop or the next traffic case I want to talk to you about is this Cornhole. Zach knows how to say it. So what happened here was that a suspect was stopped for speeding and a deputy handed off the citation to a backup officer to complete. The backup officer finished the citation and held onto it for 2 minutes while the canine was deployed around the car, right? Cornhole. Okay. Am I saying it right? Cornhole? Zach? Okay. So that is not going to... Oh, I've seen that. That's awesome. Cornhole. Thank you. All right. I'm so bad at this. And by the way, I had to take a foreign language to get my bachelor's degree. And I took Spanish. And I tell you, I probably shouldn't have passed. Okay. I'm just, maybe I was having sex with a teacher or something like that, because there's no way that I learned anything substantive in that class. And it was like Spanish 1 and 2. So, all right. So we have a problem here, right? The stop was unlawfully extended. You cannot extend the stop to do canine related business unless you have reasonable suspicion. Okay, what about this stop? Driver was stopped for speeding. While waiting for dispatch to return with the driver's warrant check, the officer ran his dog, which alerted, right? So what do you call that, right? What would you call that doctrine, right? Stop for speeding, waiting for dispatch, ran the dog while dispatch is, running that guy. What would you call that doctrine if you upheld it, right? Yeah. Unavoidable downtime, right? Okay. So that's good to go, right? It should be good to go. Okay. Now let me just talk about this, this Lynn's case. Here's what happened. So an officer in Idaho stopped this car, occupied 4 times. And the officer, a canine handler came out and was going to do a free air sniff, on the vehicle. So far, so good, right? But there is no reasonable suspicion. Now, when the handler got the people out of the car, right, which, of course, we can do, right? We know that. The primary officer saw all this going down and said, this is really not safe, right? If you think about it, I have a handler who's going to have his back turned, deploying that canine, while 4 subjects are going to be watching him. They can bum rush this guy, and it may not be safe, right? So the primary officer, put down the ticket book and watch these four occupants for safety, you know, while the dog was deployed without reasonable suspicion? You know, are we good? Yes or no? No. Okay, I'm gonna ask you a question, Ryan. And the answer is no, okay? The answer is no. The problem is that why do we have an extension, right? Why are we stopping our ticket? Because we want to, because this officer safety issue that was created because this handler wants to turn his back and run a dog. That, the court found that that was canine related business. But it is very easy to fix, right? All you got to do is, if this situation ever happened to you, at least have a fighting chance, is to write the ticket and look at the same time, right? So it could be saved. All right. Ryan says, whilst trying to stay within the time frame of the stop, occupants refuse to get out of the car. Primary officer stops what he's doing to help. Are the occupants responsible for the delay? Yes, absolutely. Okay. That's totally different. If you tell somebody to get out of a vehicle, right? And, you know, in your state does not restrict this, you know, but anyway. So most states don't. So, and they don't get out and you want them out, then that's a delay caused by them. So absolutely, totally agree. We have no problem. We have no problem there. Okay. A federal officer extended a stop to question a driver about drugs and called for a canine without reasonable suspicion. The driver sued for a civil rights violation, right? You guys know where this is going to go. This was a clear violation, right? A clear violation. The law is clearly established here. There is no debate. The Supreme Court made it clear in Rodriguez. The officer was held liable. Now, the one thing also, if the handler made the stop, right? If the handler is the one that made the stop and he wants to run his dog as a free or sniff without reasonable suspicion, well, you should do your best to make sure that you're not extending the stop for this canine related business. And what I mean by that is, like, if you have a backup officer who's going to take the stop from you and is going to process the traffic stop, I don't want to hear a lot of chit chat. I don't want to hear a lot of chit chat about why the dog is being run, what's your hunch, what else you got going. I just want you to get down to business, right? So, and one of the reasons I say this, because I have a lot of officers on here that are not canine handlers, okay? And all I'm saying is, if you're not a canine handler and the canine handler tells you or asks you, I guess, hey, can you take the stop over for me? And you know, there's no reasonable suspicion. Don't dilly-dally. Just get down to business, man. Take that stop over and just take the stop, right? Okay.
Ooh, look at that tire. See the back of her tire? That tire looks ultra dangerous, so I'm gonna find out what's going on with this back rear tire. Hello, you can open it. I don't want to stand on that side because I get ran over.
No, I should get run over. No, my window doesn't.
Whose car is this? Are you aware that back wheel is like doing this? Everybody jump out of the car. He's going to write the warning for unsafe equipment. It's going to be that rear driver wheel. Just come on back here to this deputy. Okay, so we're getting some nervous looks. Probably going to definitely deploy the dog on this one. Come on. Dude, you go girls. You go girls. The canine alerted to the vehicle for narcotics. Anybody got any narcotics in the vehicle?
No.
Anything in that vehicle whatsoever?
There shouldn't be anything in that vehicle.
Nothing in the vehicle.
I don't have anything.
Okay. All right. Hang tight with this deputy. It's a whole kit. Spoons, syringes, the whole nine yards.
So look, the reason I show that is because, you know, was there, you know, evidence and was there, you know, proof that kind of like the traffic stop was moving forward, you know, while the cop deployed his canine, right? And you know, and there was, right? There was. And you know, and he didn't have reasonable suspicion, by the way. You know, he says, I'm getting a lot of nervous looks, you know, and that's, you know, and having, you know, a wobbling tire and plus some nervous looks is not going to be reasonable suspicion for narcotic activity, but the cop clearly has a hunch and that's going to work. Now, you know, Kyle says, no, that's actually not it. So look, Catherine actually says, you know, talk about, hey, we have an SOP, a standard operating procedure, where if a canine makes a traffic stop, we get another unit out there probably to take over that stop, right, Catherine? And I gotta tell you, I really have no problem with it. I'd rather the canine officer maybe kind of give a heads up, you know, like, hey, I'm gonna stop a vehicle for traffic if you want to send one my way, right? That way, and ideally, I tell you what would be ideal if you can do it, is to have that handler, I'm sorry, have that backup unit on, like, help with the stop the vehicle, let them just handle business, say, hey, stop the guy for five over, whatever it is, and I'll do my thing. I'll do my thing. Okay, reasonable suspicion detentions, right? Okay. So occupants reasonably suspected of narcotic activity can be detained while a canine is called to the scene, right? You know, how long can you detain them? There really is anybody from New Hampshire here? Anybody from New Hampshire? So the only so th there is no time limit, right? Except in Nevada and I think New Hampshire. Zach, have you heard about New Hampshire's 4-hour rule? Have you ever heard that before? There's like some 4-hour rule in New Hampshire. Okay. So, but you've heard of course, you know, Nevada's law. So Nevada is the only state that I'm aware of that actually has a time limit, and it's 60 minutes. After 60 minutes, it turns into an arrest, right? But no other state has that ridiculous rule, right? Live free or die. Occupants can be detained while the canine handler is diligently, and that's the word, by the way. That's the, you know, the everybody like screams when the word of the day, right? And that's the word of the day. So the officer is diligently en route to the scene. There is no set time limit, but over an hour is kind of pushing it. It's kind of pushing it. Now, occupants were detained for 50 minutes while waiting for a canine. You know, canine, that's a lot of time. But what's the question, right? Because the handler was diligently heading to the scene, there was no per se violation, right? Now, the one piece of advice I have for my little webinar folks here is, guys, just be a little careful with adding time to the stop to do unrelated things. You know, getting coffee for the for the crew, you know, before heading out to scene. You know, dropping off paperwork at the courthouse before, you know, just once you're called, right? If you are called for reasonable suspicion, right? Once you are called, the courts are going to want to know that you are, you know, kind of en route. Now, I'm not saying you can't use the bathroom. I'm not saying if you got a 2 a.m. call out, you can't go grab a Red Bull real quick. I'm not saying that. And you also do not need to, you know, roll lights and sirens. In fact, in most states, a canine officer rolling lights and sirens is going to violate state law because there's no emergency. Just be reasonable, right? Just be reasonable. Now, also one thing that comes up constantly with some of my classes is this idea of telling people the truth and having them change their mind. Okay. You can, yeah, code 2.5. Actually, I like that, Sean. That's what I teach. Code 2.5, right? Whatever that means to you, you know, but the law does not require lights and sirens. Okay. So you can tell people the truth. So what I mean by this is this case right here. Officer had reasonable suspicion for narcotics. Okay, reasonable suspicion. So far, so good. And asked for consent to search, which the driver denied. Fine, they don't have to consent. The officer then told the driver, hey, look, I have reasonable suspicion. I'm going to call a canine. And if the canine, you know, when the canine arrives, it'll take about 25 minutes, is what he told her. When the canine arrives, it'll sniff your car. And if it alerts, we're going to search. If it doesn't alert, then you can go from your point, right? So, but Zach, doesn't this cup all the time in your training classes. I can't believe how many people think that telling people the truth, right? Exactly, Anthony. So, Anthony, so I like to say, like, when you tell somebody, hey, will you give blood for a DUI, right? And you tell them, hey, if you don't give blood, you know, your license will be suspended for a year, right? Which is state law. And, you know, and let's say, for example, state law. And like, oh, well, shit, I don't want my license to be suspended. I'll give you a blood draw. Is that coerced? The answer is no, because you're just stating the facts. You're just stating the facts. Now, yeah, exactly. Let's talk about intentional touching. So real quick, the Jones case is where we're getting most of our issues here. So the what happened here is that federal government, the FBI, put a tracker on Anton Jones's Grand Cherokee. They track him for 30 days, approximately. They use that information in a search warrant. When they hit his stash house, he's sitting on about $1 million in cash and 100 kilos of cocaine. He brings it all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. He says, look, this tracker was a search. He's arguing, you know, somehow it violated his reasonable expectation of privacy. That may or may not be true. However, the Supreme Court said, actually, you have another issue, right? The government actually violated another issue. They trespassed onto your car, right? When they trespass. Now, what is a trespass? A trespass is another way of saying intermeddling, right? Intermeddling means messing with, right? Messing with your vehicle, right? That's maybe, or your stuff, right? Without your consent and so forth, right? You like what we're doing around here, Amanda? We're off the hook here. We actually hired a full-time guy to help me with my slide deck to make these things off the hook. And so you got to give Franco, if you're watching this, Franco, you are off the hook with what you're doing with the slides. So I'm glad you noticed, Amanda. So you're intermeddling or trespassing, right? And your intent is to gather information. Okay. All right. Let me see. So Zach, look at Christopher's question. Maybe you can help there. Okay. Warrants is the safest way, sure, but you don't need a warrant necessarily. But I just want to give you the tools. And I like to say that too. Like, I'm not telling you what to do. I don't care if you get a warrant. That's on you. I'm just, you know, I think that's great. I think there's some cases, you know, should maybe have a warrant, the big cases. But anyway, so let's talk about the Wobbling Tire case. Real quick, is that the Texas Highway Patrol is stopped a vehicle for a wobbling tire, okay? And is that a good reason to stop the car? You're damn right, okay? As a former trooper, that shit is a felony in my world. Why don't you guys take highway safety serious, okay? Okay? You street cops, you know, municipal cops, sheriff's department, you guys don't appreciate highway safety like I do. So stops the car, and the officer develops reasonable suspicion that the driver is engaged in criminal activity and pokes on the tire to see if there's something, like the one that was wobbling, to see if there's something in there. And sure enough, there is something in there, right? So there's 90 pounds approximately of meth and heroin in the tire, right? So the defendant here, Jennifer Lynn Richmond, says that was a search under the Fourth Amendment. When the trooper poked on the tire, somehow that was a search under the Fourth Amendment. And the Fifth Circuit said, yes, it was. They basically said that, you know, that the trooper was trespassing onto a protected area, which is the car is protected by the Fourth Amendment, you know, intermeddling, right? Trespassing for the purpose of gathering information. Another fascinating case is Saginaw, Taylor versus Saginaw. So what happened here is that Taylor gets 12 parking. Right. Sean, she did not get convicted ultimately, because I'm glad you brought that up, because ultimately they said that the trooper could touch the tire due to the, you know, basically community caretaking and motor vehicle exception, because the tire was wobbling. But if he did poke on a non-wobbling tire first, it would be suppressed. So this one is where the parking enforcement officer gives old Taylor, there's Taylor, okay? She's single and ready to mingle, okay? And they give her 12 tickets for parking violation. The way they enforce that violation, though, is that they, you know, they put that I'm sorry, I'm reading the comments. I think it's funny. But so they put a chalk mark on her tire, and they that's how they enforced it. That's how they know whether Taylor was there for 2 hours or more. And here's another vehicle that was used in the case. And she says, "Hey, look, that was a search, right? When the parking enforcement officer put that chalk on my Grand Cherokee, or not Grand Cherokee, but this Mountaineer, that was a search." Yeah, right. I mean, if you look at Jones, I mean, are they intermeddling the parking enforcement? Are they trespassing on her car? Are they trying to gather information? And the answer seems to be yes. And what the court said is that chalking is a search for Fourth Amendment purposes. As the district court aptly noted, despite the low-tech nature of the investigative technique, the chalk marks clearly provided information to Hoskins, right? This practice amounts to an attempt to obtain information on Jones. Do I agree? Yes, I do agree. Do I think that they had a recognized exception? Yes, I do. I think that the Ninth Circuit, in their case out of San Diego, actually got it right. They stipulated that it was a search, but they said that it would be a lawful search under the administrative search doctrine, which is beyond our time. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Lots of unknowns, right? Unknowns. Okay. Let's watch this video.
Suspicious vehicle sitting on the side of the store over here. What's up, brother? You good? Okay. All right, so are you sleeping in here, or are you?
Not really, like, sleeping. I kind of nodded off after I sent a text and waited forever.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, bud. Have you been arrested before?
Burglary. No.
Okay. And then what else? Any narcotics related?
No.
Okay. Do you have any, let me ask you this. Do you have any drugs?
Oh, wait. There's a weed charge.
Weed charge.
Yeah.
Do you have anything in your car you know about?
No.
Any, you use any? So you wouldn't have an issue with me searching your car, just making sure?
I kind of would, because I got all my stuff in here. And
okay.
It's kind of gross. I wouldn't want you to. There's like saw blades
you know,
and stuff
I
like
wouldn't.
that in there too. And
yeah, I wouldn't be.
Construction. And,
okay, so you don't want me
but
searching
I
the car?
Yeah.
You don't want me searching the car?
No.
Okay, nothing in the car?
Nothing. Completely broke. What am I going to do?
All right, bud. I have a canine. So I'm going to run around your car. Love it. Yeah? You want to find some dope? You want to find some dope? Come here. Come here. Come here. Let's go find dope. Let's go find out. Let's go find out. Let's go find out. Let's go find out. Let's go. Let me check. Up. Good. Come on. Check. Good boy. Check. This ain't tight, all right? Good boy. Up. All right, so what you're gonna do is hop up. Turn around. Change on your back. Okay, you're being detained right now because my dog alerted to the odor of narcotics coming out of your vehicle. Have a seat. Is that possibly what my dog was smelling?
Marijuana pipe.
You didn't know it was there? It was right here in plain.
All right. So a couple things. We're running out of time here. So look, would the officer need reasonable suspicion to deploy his dog under these circumstances? And the answer is absolutely yes. Absolutely. Because that driver does not feel free to leave. He was told to sit on the curb while this dog was being run around his automobile slash home, right? And okay, so that's just the first thing. The second, I don't know if he has reasonable suspicion. I think he does, by the way. I kind of have some backstory in this case, but he would need reasonable suspicion. Okay. Now, okay, so was this a search under the Fourth Amendment? The way that he deployed that canine, was that a search under the Fourth Amendment? And the answer is yes, right? It's, you know, and I know Zach is talking about, hey, we need a kind of case to talk about this trespass. And look, I mean, the GPS tracker didn't do any damage. The GPS tracker, you know, was very slight intermeddling, right? You know, and I guess it occupied, it doesn't really occupy space underneath the carriage. So it's just, I think the court would kind of agree with maybe these chalking cases, quite frankly. Maybe the poking the tire in Texas a little extreme, but, you know, the chalking the tire, I think, is a little bit more. So, you know, was this a search? The answer is yes. When he directed his canine to go high on that call,
let's go find right? out.
So look
let's
at what out. He does here. Ready? Let's he go goes let's low.
Find out.
And he points high. He goes low.
Good.
He says up. That's a search, right? U.S. versus Thomas. I think that you have to own that. I think that it's one thing for a dog to, I think it's one thing for a dog to do it instinctually. I think it's a different thing for the handler to direct the dog to do that. I do not teach that. I do not think that it is permissible, not with reasonable suspicion, right? Or free air sniff. Thomas is a case from 2013. It ultimately got resolved, you know, with good faith, meaning at the time in 2013, it was not clearly established whether or not this was a search. But I'll just tell you what the Ninth Circuit said. They said an officer directed his canine with his hand low to high on a truck bed. You know, in response, the canine jumped up and placed his paws on the vehicle and pressed his nose against the truck. That's pretty much what just happened in Texas, right, with video. The government claims that it's frivolous, right? For Thomas to contend that the dog's contact with this truck was a Fourth Amendment search after Jones, his argument cannot be so easily dismissed, right? Thus, it is conceivable that by directing the drug dog to touch the truck in order to gather sensory information about what was inside, the officer searched the vehicle under the Fourth Amendment. So, Egan also says the handler should not touch the vehicle. I agree. You could also contaminate the vehicle, right, Egan? You can actually have some material on your hands, and you could be, you know, maybe you did your training earlier that day, and somehow you have cocaine on your hands and you transfer it to that vehicle. I don't know. I'm just saying this. We don't want to do that, right? So what if the dog touches the car without handler direction? We know the answer. Instinctual touching is not prohibited. Well, it's not prohibited unless you're in Idaho, right? Right. Does this count when searching with cadaver dogs? I mean, why do you have to kill the mood around here, Brian? I'm trying to have a good time around here. We're chasing drugs. You guys are chasing dead bodies. I don't think the cadaver cares if you touch him or not. I don't think so. I think that it's fine, weirdo. So touching or entering the vehicle, right, could also be the probable cause, right? So that's one thing that I go into detail on in my class is like, sometimes the dog jumping in the car is actually the alert, right? And if that's the case, then that's fine, right? Okay. So driver opened the trunk to retrieve paper. The canine instinctively jumped in and alerted, right? That's fine, right? During a free air sniff, the handler left the door on purpose to help encourage the dog to enter the car. No, right? So we don't want to encourage canines to touch cars. It's just the way it is. U.S. versus Harrell. Don't you love that? That's actually a cool little... Let me do that one again. That's actually pretty badass. Hold on. We don't play around at Blue to Gold. We do not play. Without prompting a canine stuck head through an open car window to smell for drugs... I do believe that it's lawful under the Fourth Amendment. It's instinctual. You cannot control the dog, you know, 24/7. You're right. Yeah, it is. It is pretty good. It is pretty good. Now, remember, handlers directing their canine to climb onto or enter a vehicle pre-alert is a search and may result in suppression. That's what we teach here. Okay. Right. You should not direct that dog to touch the car. Now, look, I got to talk about these two Idaho cases. The first one is Howard. The canine instinctually entered an open window to sniff. This was not done. This was done without PC or consent. And the Idaho Supreme Court found that this was a search under Jones. Did they get it right? Guys, no. Okay. I do not believe they got this right. I don't know what's wrong with them. Idaho usually is a pretty good state with stuff like this. But, you know, I can read you the quote, but we don't have time for that. They got it wrong, in my opinion. But they got this one right. In Dorf, the drug canine was directed to touch the outside of the car during a free air sniff and alert it. So I'm going to have this case that Zach just brought up. So, you know, this was rightfully decided. Okay. So look, I got to pull up a case real quick. So, all right. So this is rightfully decided. Like the way that Dorf describes what happened here was really the canine handler was directing his dog to actually climb up on that car. And Idaho court said, in sum, a warrantless Fourth Amendment search occurred when narrow trespass against Dorf's vehicle for the purpose of obtaining information about or relating to the vehicle. The state has not argued that an exception to the warrant requirement applies. Accordingly, the district court did not err in suppressing the evidence. Now, we do know that the U.S. Supreme Court was asked by the state of Idaho to hear this case. They denied it. You know, does that mean that the Supreme Court, you know, believes that the Idaho got it right? Absolutely not. But it also can mean the opposite, right? So what I want to read is, Iowa. Did you see the Iowa case too? What did Wisconsin say? Hold on, Zach, real quick. Let me get you on the mic real quick.
You got me?
Yeah. What was the Wisconsin case?
It's the same. It's a Dorf like case. This one, the door was open. And I don't remember. I don't remember why it was open, if the handler did it on purpose, facilitated or not. But anyway, the dog climbs up on like the door sill and starts sniffing like a purse, I think, on the seat. And they said it was a Jones.
Okay.
Trespass.
Okay. So that one, would you agree with that case? Yes or no?
That's a lot. I mean, it's more of a trespass than Dorf potentially.
You're saying, okay, I'm sorry. You did say that that there was evidence that maybe the handler did it on purpose.
I don't think he did. Okay. I don't remember that part of it.
Okay.
But it is definitely, they did a Jones analysis, not an expectation of privacy analysis.
Well, look, I mean, have you read this State versus Baller case out of Iowa?
I have not read, no.
So this was another one of these like trespass cases. And they said that the fleeting contact by a dog of the exterior of the vehicle is not a search, right? Now, I would agree if it's instinctual, right?
Correct.
But here's the problem, Zach, is I read the dissent, and the dissent said that actually the handler pointed high on the car and the dog jumped up on the car. And I'm like, well, if that happened, I think you own that to some degree. And so they didn't really like talk about it too much. But then they said this, you know, they said, although we think the Idaho Supreme Court erred in its ultimate conclusion with Dorf and but it did say this. It was correct about common law of trespass. It talks about the restatement of torts and all this other stuff, right? Which is what you brought up. Like, we have to kind of figure out what are we using here? Like, what's the definition of trespass, right?
Yep.
And it said that the trespass, you know, the common law, the restatement of torts explains that any intermeddling amounts to a trespass. And intermeddling means intentionally bringing about a physical contact with the chattel. Chattel is a bougie way of saying car, right or property. Accordingly, this is what they said though. Look at this, Zach. Accordingly, if the handler guides the dog so that the dog is highly likely to make even a brief contact with the vehicle, intermeddling has occurred. So It's weird to me that they don't really, it's like, according to the dissenting opinion, like that is what occurred. But yet the majority opinion doesn't actually acknowledge that's what occurred. They make it sound like instinctual touching occurred. So anyway, the case confuses me a little bit. But the point is, we are having a battle royale over these issues. So the point at the end of the day, do your best to keep the dogs off your car pre-alert. All right. So let's do some quick trivia real quick. And then we're going to do the search and seizure show. Let's see if John is here as well. John, where is John? Hold on, John's here. Okay, so Zach, let me cut off your mic real quick, and then because it messes up the recording, and I'll be right back. Okay, guys, let's do some quick trivia. So that is, let's answer your questions. Let's answer your questions on the Search and Seizure Show. So you got questions, we have answers. Real quick, let's do some trivia. Let's win some fabulous prizes. We have a new rule. Hey, Rick, can you do me a favor? Can you remind me, or can you actually have your team change the trivia rules? So if you've won once, you cannot win again, and you're banned for life. And just call that the Amanda and Sean rule. I think that'd probably be best if we remember it. Okay, so guys, for those who are watching this on demand, I'm going to shut down the recording. There's no reason for you guys to stick around. Thank you so much. You have my full permission to share this video with whoever you want. You can replicate it. You can sell it for $1 million. Just split half with me. Thank you guys for listening so much. Join us again at bluetogold.com. All right. And we are going to stop the recording.